Good evening, America. Welcome to the Leslie Marshall Show. This is not Leslie Marshall. No, this is Mark Levine here from my last guest hosting gig of 2009. I hope you've enjoyed my other guest hosting gigs. And, of course, we will have plenty of Leslie Marshall, I think next week, but definitely into the new year. And I hope to we'll guest host again in the new year. I want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas. Ho, ho, ho. Many of you are scurrying around at the last minute getting your presents. That's kind of the way I do it at the last minute. That's, I don't know, maybe that's a male thing. Women seems to do it a month in advance. So you're scurrying around getting your presents, and I want to wish everyone who celebrates Christmas a Merry Christmas. I want to wish everyone who celebrates Hanukkah a Happy Hanukkah. I want to wish those who celebrate Kwanzaa a joyous Kwanzaa. And to those other Americans that celebrate neither of those three, and yes, some of them exist, I want to wish them and everyone a Happy New Year. It is that time of the season. It's that time when you're either sick of Christmas songs or you can't wait for the day to occur. It is the day when you're going to be hanging out soon with your families. Most of you, most of us, do hang out this time of year with our families. Not usually just our immediate family, but our extended families, aunts, uncles, cousins, including that uncle that really you don't like very much, but you only see during the holidays, or that cousin that's a little, I don't know, high on drugs all the time. Maybe you've got, a 95-year-old great-grandmother that's hard of hearing. Whoever it is that you celebrate with, it is the time of the holidays. It's your time of being with family and friends. It's the time of eating too much and having discussions. At least in my family, it's a time for discussions. I don't think it's just a Jewish family thing. I think a lot of families get into discussions. And anyone will tell you, certainly Miss Manners will tell you, that you can talk about anything during the holidays except three things. And those things, of course, are race, religion, and politics. Those things are a no-no. We all want to get along. You can't talk about race, religion, or politics. Now, as you know, I talk about politics all the time, as does Leslie. It is what we do. We are talk radio hosts. We can talk about anything. And last times I've been on the show, I've given you detailed analysis about the healthcare bill, cap and trade, about global warming, filibusters, the Senate, you name it. Well, today, a couple days before Christmas, I want to deviate from that a little bit and get personal. I want to talk about our families and our relatives. And whether it's Christmas or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or any other meal where a bunch of people get together, what is it that you are afraid to talk about? What are you leery of talking about? Do you ever get in a political discussion with a member of your family? Maybe not your mother, could be, or your father. Maybe it's some distant cousin, and you've got dramatically different views from theirs. You're a liberal, they're a conservative. You're a conservative, they're a liberal. Maybe they're a leftist, maybe they're a libertarian, maybe they just hate government entirely, or maybe they just don't like you and are arguing to be ornery. I don't know. Are you able to talk about politics at the dinner table? If you're able to talk about politics, let's take it one step further. Are you able to talk about religion? I mean, if politics is off limits, religion is certainly off limits. I think every one of our families has people that are more religious and some that are less religious. You ever argue about religion at the table? You ever have someone say you should be more religious or less religious at the table? What if you're of different religions? Christian, Jewish, Muslim, Buddhist, Hindu? What if you have different disagreements on religious practices or traditions in your own family? Well, Grandpa always did it this way. No, he didn't. Yes, he did. No, Grandma wouldn't let him. Grandma did it this way. Well, I'm not going to do it that way. That's not my tradition. What are the arguments, disagreements, that happen when we all get together with our families? Are you willing to talk about religion? I'll have you know that in my family, we just finished celebrating Hanukkah, and we had a long discussion, and it really wasn't contentious at all, on who believed in God and who did not. And we had all levels of belief in my family, from belief to non-belief. Could you have that discussion in your family, or would that be off-limits? And what about the last and maybe most off-limit topic of all in America, the topic of race? Can you talk about race? Is that allowed in your family? Is it okay when a bunch of white people get together and talk about race? Is it okay when a bunch of black people get together and talk about race? Or Asians or Latinos? Is it easier to talk about race when you have people only of your own race with you? Or is it tougher? Is it harder to talk about race when you have someone of another race in the room? Have you ever been talking about race with people of your own race and suddenly someone of another race walks in and you're like, And you be quiet? I'm not saying racist things. I mean, people talk about race all the time without being racist. And frankly, I'd like to hear some listeners be honest with me. You're only giving your first name, and heck, you can change your first name if you want. My board op, Chris, is a great guy, but he won't know if you're telling a different first name. It's okay. You can be anonymous here. What do you talk about when you talk about race? And have you ever talked about race and have someone of another race come in and you be quiet? And should you? Should you be quiet? Let me be clear. I've always felt there's a big difference between talking about race and racism. I think talking about race is fine. In fact, I think some people are so cautious and refuse to talk about race, and that in itself is a benign form of racism. After all, what is racism? In my view, racism is prejudgment based on race. And if you refuse to talk about race, like let's say you're describing a friend of yours and you have another friend and your friend is going to meet your friend has to pick him out in a crowd because, you know, there'll be a bunch of people there and you want the two of them to meet. And you say, well, my friend, he's about 6 feet tall and he's about 35 years old. And you don't mention that he happens to be black. Well, you could be trying as a liberal to avoid the topic of race, but really it's descriptive. Is there anything wrong with that? So have you ever been in a holiday celebration with people who were not like you? Maybe you're away for college. Have you ever been, white people, in a holiday celebration where most everyone, or even everyone except you, was black? Black people, you ever been in a holiday celebration where you're the token black in the room? Or Asian, or Latino? You ever gone to a celebration and you're the only non-Hindu person there? How does that feel? How do we deal when we are a fish out of water? It could be race. It could be religion. It could be the only man in a room full of women. The only woman in a room full of men. It could be the only straight person at a party full of gay people. Or the only gay person in a party full of straight people. Does it matter whether you're part of the minority or part of the majority? In other words, if you're a white person at a black church, is the feeling any different from a black person at a white church? Does it matter whether you're the majority or the minority? I want to talk these 3 hours. We have lots of time about what makes us who we are. And part of that is our differences. I think it's perfectly fine, and in fact, it's a good liberal thing to do, to celebrate our differences. We liberals, we progressives, believe in the mosaic, not the melting pot. You know the old image of the melting pot in American history? They teach that the melting pot, right? All these immigrants came from England and Spain and Germany and China and Africa and Thailand and wherever. And they melt into one America. Well, liberals tend to prefer the image of the mosaic, right? We all melt into one. We're all joined together. We are all Americans, no question about it. But we keep also our individuality. We are African American or Jewish American or Italian American or Catholic American or Muslim American. Whatever we are Americans. But it's okay to celebrate that aspect of our identity. So when you call in today, what I want you to think about is, first of all, what topics you can and can't talk about at the dinner table. Can you talk about politics? Can you talk about religion? Can you talk about race? And how your views would change depending on whether you're absolutely comfortable, you know everyone in the room, everyone shares your same race, religion, political beliefs, or if you are the odd person out, someone, the only man in the room, the only woman in the room, the only, as I said, maybe the only foreign-born person in the room when everyone else has been born in America. Maybe you're the only Southerner in a room full of Yankees. Well, actually, this covers most of the Northeast, so that may be possible. Whatever it is, I'd be curious to know, when you come to your holiday celebrations, when do you feel at home and when don't you? And does it have anything to have to do with topics? And are there topics we shouldn't discuss? I mean, I'm a talk radio host. I'm allowed to talk about anything. That's why I like being a talk show host. I can talk about race. I can talk about religion. I can talk about politics. And no one can get on me for bringing up controversial topics. maybe it is inappropriate to mention to grandma, who is a someone who's believed in her religion very strongly for 60 years, to even discuss whether or not God exists. Maybe that's offensive, and maybe you should just lay off it and eat the Christmas turkey. What do you think? When is it appropriate? When is it not appropriate? I want to hear from you. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the Leslie Marshall Show. This is Mark Levine, your second favorite talk show host. Leslie's on vacation, probably with her family, and I want to know if you're with your family. And what do you think about it? I got to tell you, I think people are a bit afraid of this topic. They don't want to call in at 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543, because they're afraid of dissing their family. So I want you to know that I pardon everyone in advance. You don't have to give your real first name. Give a fake first name. Change the names to protect the guilty or the innocent, as it were. But we talk about politics all the time. Leslie does. I do. I want to get a little personal now. I want to talk about what happens around the dinner table, particularly at the holidays. I can think of lots of events that happen at the holidays. It's sort of a time when we all get together and find out who's grown up and who's still immature and what kids are saying what now and what the old folks are saying. And I don't know, it just seems like a time when a lot of things occur. So the feminist once taught us that the personal is political. I really learned that very well. And that means that the things that happen in our personal lives matter politically. Feminists would bring up, for example, that a husband can rape his wife. And that was something that really was only whispered about. Now, I don't mean to get that dark. Really what I want to find out for you is what you think is safe and what you think is unsafe. And, you know, I'm not saying you have to give the great answer for all families across the United States of America, but in your own family. What can you discuss and what can you not discuss? Could you discuss religion? Could you discuss politics? Could you discuss race? Could you only discuss the things that everyone agrees on? And what do you do when you got a family member who says something that is a bit impolitic, a bit, shall we say, racist, or even a bit incorrect? I mean, do you correct old Aunt Sally when she says something she shouldn't be saying about black people? Do you correct Uncle Henry when he says something about Muslims that's a little harsh, a little incorrect? Are you willing to argue with your conservative cousin who listens to Rush Limbaugh all the time? You know, it's funny. I just, of course, had a family celebration, and I won't name names, because that would be unfair, and I don't expect you to other as well. But I was telling them about my recent Fox News appearance, where they disputed the fact that spending from the government helps the economy. And I was telling the good people at Fox News that that's really not disputed. That, you know, not just because I have an economics degree from Harvard, but really any economist will teach you that government spending helps the economy. Now, you know, you can argue about which spending helps more than other spending. You can say tax cuts help too. There's lots of other things you could say, but the general thing that government spending helps the economy really isn't disputed. But, of course, on Fox News, they were disputing it and telling me that anyone that teaches me otherwise, that was just Harvard mumbo-jumbo. They were going to stay, well, I guess, ignorant. Anyway, you've heard me tell this story before if you've listened, and I was telling this story to my family at Thanksgiving, and I had a cousin, a young cousin, attending college, who I know is from the conservative side of my family. And I asked her if she was taking any classes. She said she was taking economics. And I asked her, do they teach you in economics that government spending helps the economy? And she said, yes, they do, but I don't believe them. And we all had a good laugh around the table. And sometimes I think that conservatives particularly are anti-education. They're anti-knowledge. Or at least they don't think that they could ever can learn anything in those highfalutin universities. I mean, I guess a conservative is the kind of person that instead of going to a neurosurgeon in order to get their brain tumor removed, would go to, I don't know, Joe's knife-cutting brain service. Oh, maybe that's not the best place to go. But, you know, they seem to think that education is a bad thing. And so even my dear cousin, and I love her dearly, I love the fact that she admitted that she was taught at a very conservative university by conservative professors that, yes, government spending helps the economy, but she still refused to believe it. Do you have a relative like that? A relative that refuses to face something that's right before their nose? It could be political. It could be racial. And in fact, I'd really hope that some of you will put down your fears. So, call in under an anonymous name at 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543, and tell me some of the things that go on at your holiday table. And, you know, maybe you're a black person who wants to call in and say what black people tell about whites when whites aren't around. Maybe you're Latino and you've got some Latino cultural differences that are going around that people are talking about. If you got a white family and you've got a closet racist uncle or cousin, you don't have to name names. But I want to know what people talk about and what people are afraid to talk about. Will you, for example, correct a member of your family, not your dad or mom? Maybe you'll correct them, maybe you won't. It's easier to correct your dad or mom or brother or sister. But will you correct a great aunt? Will you correct a great-great uncle if they say something that is just a little bit racist? Maybe it's not even intentionally so. Maybe they're talking about colored people. And let's face it, that's not the phrase that's used anymore. But they're in their 70s. They're in their 80s. Do you gently let them know, well, Grandma, people don't use that phrase anymore? Or do you let it go? Do you think, you know what, she's 83. Just let it go. Do you ever have religious discussions? You ever had, Christians trying to convert Jews? That's happened to me. When I was at a Christmas dinner of a significant other a few years back, they seemed to really press me very hard to become Christian, which I didn't really mind, but a lot of Jews, I think, would find offensive. What is fair grounds at the holiday table, and what should you avoid like the plague? Can you tell gossip? Can you talk about someone's divorce? Can you talk about someone's health problems? Or do you only talk about the weather and how good the turkey is this year? What can you talk about? Let me know. Share your stories. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. This is Mark Levine. I'll be back in a bit. So, what is appropriate holiday dinner table discussion? Can you talk about politics? Can you talk about religion? Can you talk about race? Can you talk about Aunt Sally's divorce? Or is the only thing you can really talk about, hey, Ma, the turkey's good. Grandma, love the stuffing. The weather's cold. What can you talk about at your holiday dinner table? Toby from Connecticut, what can you talk about? Are you there, Toby? Toby. Did we lose Toby?
We might have. We'll put him back on hold.
Ah. Let's see if we can bring Toby up. The question is, what can you talk about? You know, there are a lot of topics that people are very much afraid of. And I think that no more does this seem clear than, the big family holiday dinner table. It is the season. Christmas is around the corner. Hanukkah just happened. Kwanzaa's in a couple days. And we're going to be facing those awkward questions. I mean, are you willing to have an extended discussion of healthcare reform at your table? Or is that a topic that, you really have to avoid? Toby, are you there now? I'm afraid we lost Toby. Oh, yes, there you are. Welcome, Toby.
I was off and running, having a big old conversation all by myself.
Well, now we're listening to you. Please, tell me what you were saying.
Okay, and real quick, anybody doesn't believe government spending stimulates an economy, talk to somebody who's facing a base closure and see how hard those cities and states fight for that base. But anyway, I think on your major question, it depends by and large on who the people in your family are and where they are, you know, in their lives. I can tell you that in my family, one thing, because my wife and I are liberals, we couldn't go to a family event 10 years ago without inevitably after dinner someone telling racist jokes. And, really? You know, they knew we didn't like it. And, you know, that would almost make it more fun. But then we got into foster care, got several other people into foster care. We adopted kids of other races. Several of my relatives did. And I'm going to tell you something. Once these kids became family members and, you know, we had skin in the fight, I'm going to tell you what, I haven't heard a racist remark at a dinner table in a long time. So, you know, people change, people evolve, and you got to know, you know, people know my wife and I are heavy into politics, and we'll leave it alone if they'll leave it alone. And, you know, so it all depends maybe even on what mood everybody's in. They might just want to say something just to fire things up for a little while. You know, so you just got to know your people. I mean, I got a grandmother that was a devout Catholic, and you could say anything. Her belief in God and what she believed biblically wasn't going to be altered by what you believed, even if she thought it was ignorant. She wasn't going to get angry. But I, you know, I had another grandparent who it was the straight and narrow, and there was one view, and that's all she wanted to hear. So you
well, let me ask you this,
people.
Toby. What, and again, you don't have to name names. I'm not trying to get anybody in Toby's family in trouble. But what do you remember in any holiday, you know, Christmas, Thanksgiving, birthday, I don't know, your biggest, I don't know, disagreement? Was it over race? Was it over racist jokes? Was it over politics? Was it over religion? What causes the most friction in your family?
You know, for me, I can talk about anything and I don't take it personally. So that's a tough question for me to answer, because I feel like if you're not talking about these things openly, you're doing your family and your society a disservice. I don't believe it's good to have a discussion about race relations if you don't have a mixed group. It does no good for a bunch of white people to get together and talk about relationships between blacks and whites. That conversation needs to happen, you know, with people of a mixed group involved. And if you're not doing that, then you're missing a huge part of the conversation.
Toby, how does the conversation differ? We certainly have listeners who are African-American. Tell them, and I'll share my own experience, how you think a conversation on race differs when it's all whites in the room and when it's a mixed crowd.
Well, if you're white, your experience walking around as an African-American is, to say the least, limited. And you may think you know a lot of things, but having not walked in those shoes, it is helpful to hear from somebody who has.
Now, you have foster children that are black?
Go ahead.
You have foster children that are black?
What's that?
Toby, you have foster children, right, that are African-American?
Yeah, well, I adopted Puerto Rican, African-American. I've got other relatives that adopt an Asian and Puerto Rican. And so, you know, we got kids from a wide variety of cultural backgrounds and ethnic backgrounds.
And I got to, first of all, I just want to praise you for doing that, because I got to tell you, ask any adoption agency, and they will tell you that there may be a shortage of white babies, but there's not a shortage of people, of babies of different races. And so, you know, a lot of people don't seem to understand when they're talking about abortion decisions or things like that, that we export our surplus black babies to Canada. It's not a very pretty thing, but Canadians seem to be more anxious to take black babies than white ones. And I got to tell you, there's some black families. There's some black, African-American interest groups that are very opposed to white families taking black babies, and I disagree. I just don't think there's enough black parents to take black babies, and I think a child needs love, and it doesn't matter what race there is, they need to take care of them. So first of all, I just want to praise you for doing that, for taking a step that many parents won't take. And but I'm curious to know, given your unique experience, Toby, whether it's tough when your kids face a racist remark or something, and they come to you, their parents, that are white, liberal, but white, if that causes any difficulty?
Well, so far, I'll be honest with you, so far my kids, knock on wood, haven't had to deal with it.
Are they still very young?
You know, maybe it's just outside. It would have to be almost a direct frontal assault. You know, my wife and I have talked about this, and when or if it happens, we're going to take it on head on. You know, we've talked about our other relatives that have adopted, and if it happens, we're going to take it head on. You know, and the great thing about this is the more you get to know people, not know people from a TV show or see somebody at work that you say hi to as you pass them, but actually know people, as in sitting in your living room or sitting at your dining room table, know them, then the more the ignorance is dispersed and the broader your views and ideals become.
You
become more balanced and you understand things better.
I couldn't agree with you more, Toby. And in fact, in the Christmas spirit, in the Hanukkah spirit, in the holiday, New Year's spirit, I hope that each of us take the opportunity, if we haven't done so, and many of us have done so, I certainly have, but go and be the only person in a room full of people who are not of your culture. That means if you're a white person, be in a room with the only white person. You got 50 black people around. If you don't, you know, blacks as minorities have done that more with whites. If you're whites, do it with blacks. Go to a mosque. See what it's like to be surrounded by Muslims. Go to a synagogue if you're Christian. If you're Jewish, go to a mosque. Go to a friend's house who's gay and has mostly gay friends around. You know, go and see what it's like to be with people who are different from you. You know, I think that people in the majority are often with only people of their kind. Usually minorities have more experience being the only X in the room. But go and do that and learn from people. And what I've found is that if you go with an open eye and an open heart, that usually, almost always, you're welcomed. Every time I've gone to a black church to hear gospel music, I have been welcomed with open arms. There's a little bit of a grin, like, what are you doing here? And I say, you know, I like your music. And then soon I got an arm around me, and people are welcoming me. It's easier if you got a friend, obviously, who belongs to that church, who can invite you in, show you your way around. But I just really want to encourage people, in the spirit of brotherhood that is this season, not only to hang out with your own kind. I don't know what kind, what difference that is. You know who you are. You know, maybe go to see a Hindu celebration. Do you know what that's like? Maybe go to whatever it is, go hang out with your Latino neighbor's family. But what I think you'll find is that for all the differences we have and the different foods we eat and the different prayers we say, really there's a lot that we're alike. That families are families, and there's always the dynamic between parents and kids and sisters and brothers, and there's usually a lot of love in the room, and occasionally there's an ornery relative. But let me encourage everyone in the spirit of this season to do that. And when we come back, I want to know if any of you have done that and what it's like to be the stranger in the room, the person who's different, the one who's out of water. And how'd you feel about that? I'll share some of my own experiences as well. This is Mark Levine. The toll-free number is 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Thank you, Toby. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the Leslie Marshall Show. This is Mark Levine filling in for Leslie Marshall. I want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas, a Happy Hanukkah, a Joyous Kwanzaa, a Happy New Year. I don't think Ramadan's this season, but, you know, enjoy that too. Whatever you want to do, coming up tomorrow, the next day, I heard some cheers. Coming up tomorrow, the next day, you will almost certainly spend a lot of time with family. If not, then do me a favor, seek out family. Seek out friends. Frankly, there's a lot of depression this time of year for people who are lonely and don't have friends and family. So seek them out. Most everyone I know will invite you into their home to join them for Christmas, for Hanukkah. Heck, even Jews, you may not be surprised. You know, we talk about what people do when no one's watching. Let me tell you what Jews do on Christmas Day. There are two main traditions for Jews on Christmas Day. One is to eat Chinese food, and the other is to go see a movie. And let me tell you, it's kind of cool to see a movie. Actually, Christmas Day, you're more likely the evening to see a more mixed crowd. But you go, midday, matinee, Christmas Day, or maybe Christmas Eve, and you go to the theater, and it's only Jews. It's this kind of weird thing. It's like Jews come out when no one's looking, and we go to movies. But even we Jews are with our families. Usually on Christmas, it's a day off. It's a time to hang out with families. And so I guess I want to know what it is that your family will not talk about. Now, I got to tell you, it's hard to get callers on this topic because I think you're afraid of your families. Yeah, all I got to do is pick up the phone, give me an assumed name, call 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. You know, I wonder whether race is the tough topic. Maybe it is religion. Because no matter whether you have a family that's all the same religion or different religions, even if you're all the same religion, there's all manner of religious observance. I mean, you know that's true, right? There are Christians that think of Christmas as a day for a tree and Santa Claus and a bunch of presents. And there are other Christians that take Jesus and the creche and, very, very seriously and say it's a religious holiday. It's being desecrated by all this commercialism. And you might get in a disagreement over that. And if you're of different religions, the disagreement might be even more. But it doesn't just have to be disagreement. It could be sometimes that, we agree or we agree to disagree. I mean, you can have very pleasant conversations where you disagree. And what's interesting to me is that sometimes I get far more respectful conversations on religion and even race than I do in politics. It's fascinating to me, and I don't know whether it's a particularly corrosive political behavior that's come from the Republicans ever since Obama's been elected, or maybe ever since Clinton was elected, but this idea that you don't talk about religion or you respect someone else's religion, because after all, it's their religion, and you certainly don't talk about race. Well, that's gross and wrong and just seems inappropriate, particularly in mixed company. But politics? Oh, you hate America, you liberals. You conservatives, you just want babies to die. Well, maybe some do, but I don't think most do. Is it true that we can be more aggressive and more corrosive when we talk about politics than even the two most controversial topics I can think of, which is race and religion? It's hard to think of really any more controversial topics than race and religion. But today, given that we have, interestingly, a Republican Party that insisted on pushing the health care reform bill to Christmas Eve because they had to delay it to the very, very last minute. I mean, I don't know if you know, just last night, just today, in fact, both last night and today, the Democrats said to the Republicans, look, we have the votes now. You know we have the votes. We broke your filibuster. Let's just get it all done. We'll get it done at 1 a.m. tonight, Wednesday. It's a new legislative day because, it's after midnight. We'll get it done. Everyone can go home. They can all catch flights out early on Thursday morning and be with their families by Christmas Eve. And the Republicans said no. No, 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 no. If you're going to pass health care reform, if you're going to allow poor people and middle-class people and people with diseases to get adequate health care, we're going to ruin your Christmas. And they said, no, we're not going to let it happen at 1 a.m. We have the right to insist that you take this vote at 9 a.m. on the 24th. Well, you know what will happen. It'll start at 9 a.m. There'll be some argument. There'll be some disagreement. By the time they get to a vote, it may be 1 p.m., maybe 2 p.m., and then everyone's got to get home. And for people who live in, California, Alaska, Hawaii, they're not going to get home by Christmas. There's just no way that they're going to get out of there and hop on a plane and be home for Christmas. I'm not just talking about the members of Congress. They've been elected. They make a lot of money. They can handle it. I'm talking about their staff. I'm an ex-staffer. I know how it is. We worked hard. Very, very hard. Who do you think reads the 2,000-page bill? Usually not the members of Congress. It's we, the staff, who do all the work. And so the Republicans were saying, not just the Democratic staff, we wouldn't think they'd have any Christmas spirit towards them, but their own staff, the people who loyally serve them, that we are just going to make a point because the bill's going to pass anyway. We're going to make a point. We're not going to let that vote. We're not going to consent. Now that our filibuster has been broken, we're still not going to consent to a vote on Wednesday night. Tonight, no vote tonight. No, we're going to make them vote tomorrow just so they miss Christmas. It's a screw-em mentality. It's interesting that that's being used on Christmas Eve. I mean, is that in the Christmas spirit? I have no problem with partisanship. I actually defend it. Right? I'm glad that we have disagreements. That's what a democracy is all about. If we all agreed or we were all required to agree or we only had one party, we wouldn't have a democracy. But when you fight a battle and you lose to the majority of democratically elected representatives, or in this case it's a super majority, given that the Republicans filibuster everything, isn't it time to lay down the arms and go home? Isn't it time to stop praying that the Democrats die? The way Tom Coburn did when he prayed that Senator Byrd wouldn't find his way to the floor, age 92 in the snow, in his wheelchair. It's amazing to me that the Republicans are the ones who are defending this self-righteous version of religiosity, right? I mean, fundamentalist Christians are 80%, 85%, 90%. I don't know the numbers, but it's awfully high. They're Republicans. And yet it's these same people who are willing to desecrate Christmas in order to not stop health care reform, because they're not going to stop it, but just in order to say, ha, screw them. Ha, 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 you're going to miss Christmas with your families just because we're mad because you are helping people that we don't want to help. We're mad because our allies in the insurance companies are going to make a little less profits. So we're sticking it to you. We're going to ruin your Christmas. I would be curious of you conservatives out there. I'd bet that there's not a single conservative listening to my voice, a single human being listening to my voice right now, who can defend what the conservatives, what the Republicans are doing. Not against health care reform. If you're against health care reform, you're against health care reform. I disagree with you. We can have that disagreement. We're Americans. We can argue amongst ourselves. But is there anyone out there that will defend the stick-it-to-a mentality, the F-em mentality? We all know what F is. I can't say it on the radio. The F-em mentality of the Republicans who want to simply ruin people's Christmas. What is the purpose of that? They could have had the vote tonight. They're choosing to have it tomorrow just to say to the Democrats, F them. You know, for all that the Democrats, the Republicans have done, I just can't imagine anything like that. I defy a single conservative or anyone listening to my voice justifying not the opposition to health care reform. I know your arguments for that. We can argue those. But the idea that we're going to have to put the vote over to Christmas Eve. You know, they were even filibustered a military appropriations bill that everyone agreed on, you know, got to fund the troops so they don't die and lose body armor and be shot up by Al-Qaeda terrorists. That's something that Republicans generally like. Frankly, it's usually the Democrats, if anyone, who are opposed to certain military appropriations bills. They even filibustered that just so the health care reform would delay on to Christmas. What is with these people? Do they really have no idea of the Christmas spirit? When can we ever come together as Americans and say, we agree to disagree? I don't care whether it's on our dinner tables or on the floor of the House and the Senate. When are we ever going to say, you know what? We disagree. This is America. You got your votes. You got your majority. Congratulations, you win this battle. We'll see you again next year. Is that too much to ask? 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Welcome back to the Leslie Marshall Show. This is the second hour. I am your fill-in host, Mark Levine. Leslie's favorite fill-in host, I like to say. I don't know, you know, what she says when I'm not here. But hey, when I'm here, I am her favorite fill-in host. And I guess I'm thinking about the holidays. Now, normally I talk pretty exclusively about politics. If you know my show or you've heard me here on the Leslie Marshall Show, you know that I give the inside scoop out of Washington. My website is RadioInsideScoop.com. It is my job as a former congressional attorney to let you know what's really going on in the nation's capital. And right now, well, we have, I guess, the last night before the final end. It's not the end. What looks like the end. The end in 2009 of the health care reform saga. The Senate's going to pass their bill at 7 a.m. this morning. They're going to get started. They probably won't get home, some of those people in the western states, by Christmas. But, you know, that's the way the Republicans wanted. It was a final screw-you move to say, hey, we want to make sure that even if we can't stop you Democrats, we want to make sure you have a lousy Christmas. And, you know, I guess that's the nature of politics today. And I've been thinking about the kind of politics that we discuss at the dinner table, particularly around the holiday season. Politics, religion, race, all the topics that I think some people are afraid to talk about. Are you one of those families? One of those families that you sit down to a holiday meal and all you hear is the clanking of utensils and the chewing of food? Are you a family more like my family that, not only is everybody talking, but usually everybody's talking at once. Two or three or four people are saying two or three or four different things, and it's everything from gossip to what's going on in the world to what's going on in, amongst our family. And I like it that way. I like to have open discussions, even with people I disagree with, even if it's on politics. Now, a lot of people come to me on politics because they know I'm a talk radio host, and it just seems like they kind of want to lay down the gauntlet. I think I'm sort of have an open target on my back. Oh, Mark, he's a progressive talk show host. Well, you know, I'm mad at Obama for doing XYZ. As if, you know, my homie Obama does anything I want him to do. Hey, you know, Barack, I told you to do it this way. He and I don't talk as much as I'd like, meaning not at all this year or last year. But I'm real hopeful that Barack will do everything I say. But do me a favor. Don't blame me personally for everything that our president does. If you want to complain, you go right ahead. I may agree with you.
It's all your fault, Mark.
It is. I voted for him. I admit it. I voted for him. So I guess anything he does that's imperfect is somehow my fault. And I guess like most presidents, he's attacked from the left and the right. You know, I mean, the right, they're ready to go all Hitler on him, I guess. They're ready to call him the worst thing since the Third Reich. But even on the left, in fact, I see a lot of anger on the left, some of it which I share. The public option in healthcare, right? I support it. Most of America supports it. The House supports it. The Senate, at least thus far, does not, because we couldn't get the 60 votes because Republicans filibustered. So now, in January and February, there's going to be a conference between the bills, and I guarantee you that we on the left are going to fight very hard for a public option, and should we not prevail, there's going to be a lot of anger at Barack Obama. But, you know, sometimes I think we have to look at ourselves and say, well, what have we done to elect progressive Democrats? What have we done to get rid of the Joe Liebermans in our party and try to focus on real progressives? So my heart of my question for you, and I really want you to think about it as the holidays come up. Maybe this is more appropriate after the holidays when these conversations are fresh in people's minds. But what is it that you can say and what can't you say at the dinner table? That's good. I like that, Chris. What is it appropriate to talk about? Religion, politics, race? Does it matter if there's, I mean, like Toby from Connecticut called in and his family would say some things that were borderline racist until he adopted some children of a different race. And, well, there went that discussion. How do you feel, have you ever spent the holidays in a different place with a different family that had different cultural traditions? I think a lot of people in college face this when they go off and they, you know, they can't fly home for the holidays. So they're with other people with other traditions. And it doesn't just have to be on the holidays. What is it about our differences that sustains us? What is it about our differences that divides us? You know, I was reading today an article in the New York Times about the Vatican, about specifically Pope Benedict XVI, and he is moving to take Pope Pius XII one step closer to sainthood. Do you know who Pope Pius XII was? This was who, let's face it, most Jews call the Holocaust Pope. This is the Pope that was Pope while Adolf Hitler was in power. And you can argue, and Catholics and Jews, and argue amongst themselves. I mean, Jews argue with Jews, Catholics argue with Catholics. Lots of other people argue what he did or could have done during the Holocaust. I'm not a fan. I believe he could have done more. Pope Pius XII was able, like all popes, to excommunicate large numbers of Catholics. And I'm sorry to say, many of the very worst murderers, killers, horrible individuals, evil people of the Holocaust were at least putatively Catholic. In fact, many of them were from Austria, and four of the largest six concentration camps were run by people, at least from Catholic families. Now, I'm not trying to say they were good Catholics. I'm not trying to attack all Catholics here. Please don't tell me that. I'm saying they were bad Catholics. And I'm saying the Pope should have said they were bad Catholics by excommunicating them. Hitler was born a Catholic, and while he hated Christianity and certainly spoke against it, excommunicating him would have sent a terrific signal, I think, to Catholics all across the world that if you participate in mass murder, if you round up women and children and gas them, if you even help by turning in your neighbors in order to get another ration card, if you participate in the Holocaust, you're not a good Catholic, you're not a good Christian, you're not a good person. And Pope Pius XII could, I think, have excommunicated anyone, blanketly anyone, who's involved in mass murder, involved in the Holocaust, and I wish he had. Now, he didn't, and I understand some of the reasons he didn't. And people will tell you all the time he was afraid. He was afraid the Nazis would come in. After all, the fascists were in Italy. They would come in. They would knock him off the Vatican throne, maybe take him away himself to kill him. I don't think they would have, because I think that there are enough Catholics in the world, including some that supported Hitler, that would have immediately stopped. I just think of all the Catholic German troops or the Polish troops or the French Catholics and all the others who supported the Nazis, I don't think they would have countenanced the Nazis doing something to the Pope. But the Pope was afraid. He was personally afraid. He's human. He's frail. Okay. He was afraid, and he backed off. We all know examples of people who are afraid to help others in need, and so they hide. And many Catholics point out that Pope Pius XII did secretly hide some Jews in the Vatican, did help some Jews. But what he refused to do was publicly speak out in glowing terms against the Holocaust, even though he knew that people were being rounded up. He refused to excommunicate Hitler and all the Nazis in the SS, all the Nazis who were in the concentration camps murdering people. And so I think Pope Pius XII was not the best man on earth. Was he a Nazi? No, he wasn't. Did he kill people? No. I think his refusing to speak out led to hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of deaths. But did he actively go out and murder people? No, he didn't. He's an imperfect man. But when I hear Pope Benedict XVI is moving toward making him a saint, yeah, that makes me kind of mad. And I admit, I do it from my own perspective. I'm Jewish. I admit, it makes me mad. Because to me, a saint does not allow the Holocaust to occur. Maybe an ordinary, fragile human being does. I accept that. I'm not saying he's evil. I'm not saying he's the devil. But a saint? No, 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 no. And as a Jew, maybe I shouldn't be defining who's a saint. But if you define as a saint someone who allowed the murder of, I don't know, one-third of my people, that upsets me a little. Now, I'd be curious to know if Catholics have a different view. Part of what I'm trying to focus on in these 3 hours is how our own individual identities affect how we look at things, right? Whether we're black or white, whether we're Jewish or Christian, whether or Muslim, whether we are male or female, how is it that our individual identities affect it? But I got to tell you, I'm upset, and the Roman Jewish synagogue is still going to allow Pope Benedict XVI to speak there. I say no. I say it's time to say sorry. As long as you're making the Holocaust Pope a saint, you're not going to speak at our synagogue. We have no obligation to treat. Now, most Jews will probably disagree with me. They'll say, you know, he's the Pope. They got to treat him with respect. I say no. I say leave him out of our synagogues until he at least recognizes that Pope Pius XII was no saint. To me, a saint. I mean, Mother Teresa, she's a saint. I'm all for making her a saint. This is a woman who sacrificed herself to care for the poor. That's fine. You want to make a saint of someone, Pope John the 23rd. I'm not against making popes saints. You know, Pope John the 23rd, the person who did Vatican II, the person who really, as far as I'm concerned, brought the Catholic Church into the modern age and rejected some of their, let's face it, anti-Semitic past, and really brought them into a much better place. He's being made a saint. I'm okay with that. But, you know, this is one of those things that, I don't know, would you talk about at your dinner table? would you be willing to do that? Where do you stand on this issue? Am I a little too harsh on this guy? What do you think? 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to Leslie Marshall Show. This is Mark Levine filling in for Leslie Marshall, thinking about, well, the holiday season and the good, the bad, and the ugly. I don't mean to only focus on the ugly. If you want to tell some heartwarming story, you go right ahead. It is that season. Just give a call, 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. But I think that it is important to focus on what we can talk about and what we can't talk about. I think a lot of people are afraid of some of the topics that I've been talking about in the last hour and a half. It's just not politically correct. It's just too controversial. Mark, you can't talk about race. You can't talk about race openly on the air. You can't talk about the Pope and Hitler's Pope. And it's not fair. That's not fair to Catholics. Well, you know, I'm not anti-Catholic. I'm against this particular pope making this other particular pope a saint. Does that make me anti-Catholic? I don't think so. Let me hear what Mark from Buffalo thinks. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
Hey, are you talking about Ratzinger?
Yeah.
Hey, don't you know he was in the Hitler Youth Corps?
I do know that.
When he was a kid, that's how he was raised. He was raised to hate the Jews.
Well, I do know that. I don't often mention that because while I do think he should have done more to get out of it, I recognize that as a kid, you know, most people felt they had to be part of it or they would get discriminated against in some way. There were Germans, I should say, that managed to avoid being in Hitler Youth and risk their lives and well-being to do that. He was not one of them. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, but once you're in there, they kind of. Indoctrinate you into the hatred, right?
They do.
And the indoctrination was to hate the Jews.
That's true. Look, I don't want to say that the current pope is an anti-Semite. I'm not going to go that far. I'm not saying that you know, he kept his memories from Hitler Youth and that's made him an anti-Semite. I do think, though, that he is culturally insensitive. I'm willing to accuse him of that. That I don't think he quite really realizes, and maybe it is because he's German, and maybe it is because he is a former member of Hitler Youth, that when you try to canonize the pope that allowed millions to die, and not just Jews, allowed millions of non-Jews to die. I mean, all he had to do was excommunicate any Catholic, any Christian, who participated in mass murder. That's all he had to do, and he was too cowardly to do it. When you call that guy a saint, what does that do for anyone else who's a saint?
Yeah.
I mean, is that the standard?
I always thought with his background that he should have never been the one.
Well,
he's got a sordid background.
It is weird. Couldn't they have found another pope?
The Hitler Youth kind of knocked him out for me.
You know, if they wanted a German, couldn't they have found a German born in the 40s? I mean, you know, you're right. Did they have to pick him? Part of me says, though, you know what, I'm not Catholic. It's not really fair for me to comment. I don't know, Mark, are you Catholic?
Yeah, I'm Catholic, yeah.
Okay, so see, to some extent, and this kind of goes to my broader suggestion, we are more willing to attack people of our own ethnic group than another. I mean, I'm always a little uneasy when I go after Catholics since I'm not Catholic. Does that make sense?
But you are how you were raised, right?
Right, that's true.
Yeah, there you go.
That's true. So how were you
have
raised?
A nice night, man.
Well, let me ask you this, Mark.
Yeah.
Were you raised a lapsed Catholic, or did you go to Catholic school, or how Catholic are you?
I went through the commune. You know, when you go with your white suit and you get the communion and all that kind of stuff when you're a kid.
Right.
But after that, you know, I went crazy in the 60s and 70s. So.
So let me ask you this: you're gonna spend Christmas with your family, I assume.
Once in a while when I was in town, but you know, I was more of a free spirit. I was a hippie with the hair down to my.
I see.
You know, all that, and I was in California and back and hitchhiking across the country during that time.
So I'm curious, did the rest of your family sort of excommunicate you? I mean, you weren't good enough religiously?
No, we just kind of parted ways, you know. It was just I lived a different kind of lifestyle.
Okay.
Well, and they never threw me out when I came home, but
right.
I just kind of stayed away from that side of it.
Well, sometimes we make our own family, you know.
Yeah,
sometimes
that's exactly what I did. Yeah.
And so is that your family, your made up family, your friends and all you're gonna be with this season?
Yeah, yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. And there's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong. But you know, my family's kind of like scattered around the country now, you know, my kids and everything. So, but I got a nice family here.
Well, I appreciate your call, and I appreciate your comment, and there you go. There's a Catholic defending my criticism of the Pope. And I got to tell you, I do it with a little bit of trepidation. I'll criticize Jews at a moment's notice. I'm Jewish, you know. But when you criticize someone who's different, when you're a white person criticizing a black person, you know, do you feel a little uncomfortable about that? I'm curious, when you come back, call in, let me know. When is it fair to criticize, and when is it a little uncomfortable when you criticize someone who's not of the same religion or race or culture that you are? 888-6-LESLIE, 888. Oh, I still have a minute. See, I get a little tricked here because, the half-hour break is different from the hour break. Sorry, it's part of the guest host stuff. I'll get used to it. But here's my question for you, and I'd really like you to call in. It all goes back to my question of are you free to talk about? Is it easier for you to attack people of your own ethnic group than someone of a different ethnic group? I mean, I am not a big fan of Jesse Jackson. I've never been a big fan of Jesse Jackson, but a lot of black people like Jesse Jackson, so I may be a little more cautious about talking about him more than I will, say, Joe Lieberman. I hate Joe Lieberman. I feel free to say so. I'm Jewish. No one can accuse me of anything. Are you a little reticent about attacking politically someone who's of a different ethnic group than you? 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. This is Mark Levine. Give me a call. Welcome back to the Leslie Marshall Show. This is Mark Levine, your second favorite talk show host. I'm the host of the Inside Scoop on Washington, giving the news from Washington, D.C. I'm an ex-congressional attorney, and usually I talk all day about politics, and, I appreciate your calls and talks about it. And I can't quite avoid it. I'm talking a little bit about politics tonight. But really what I'm interested in is the things that we don't talk about or we're afraid to talk about. It could be politics. It could be race. It could be religion. What is it that's not politically correct? What is it that you're afraid to talk about at your holiday dinner or with your colleagues? And what should we be afraid to talk about? I'm not saying that it's always good to discuss these things. Maybe you think that, you know, some topics you don't discuss religion with grandma. She's 83. Leave her alone, right? Let me hear what Mark from Rochester thinks. Mark, what is off limits for holiday discussion?
Nothing, really. I mean, Mark, you made some valid points. As long as you have an idea about what somebody else is doing is wrong, and it's not just, well, that's not the way I do it, then it's always a valid thought. And the day you can't criticize somebody whose ideas or actions you think are wrong for valid, reasoned factors that you think are harmful, I mean, if you make speaking out against those things off limits, if you're not in the same ethnic or religious category as somebody else, how is that not just its own form of racism?
Well, I actually think it is. I think that people are a little afraid sometimes to criticize people who are not of their ethnic groups for exactly that reason. Now don't get me wrong.
I agree that they are intimidated away from doing it. I just think that it is wrong that that's the case. I mean, when you were talking before, I happen to agree with you about Ratzinger. And I think when you were talking before about it, you had valid reasoned beliefs or, you know, reasons why you felt the things she was doing was wrong, and it wasn't like you're saying, well, I have some holy text that says this, and
right,
because that's an element of my faith and not his, it means mine's right and his is wrong. I mean, that's all just stupid. But when you had reasons why what he did was wrong or why you thought what he did was wrong, I agree with you. I agree with those reasons. But even if I didn't, I would think it was perfectly valid for you to criticize somebody outside of your religious group because you were doing it out of logic and reason, as opposed to, you know, hey, you're different than me, so that's wrong.
And I like the way you put that, because I want to be clear. There are people who will go too far in the other direction. There are people who will criticize Jesse Jackson just because he's black, or will criticize the Pope just because he's the Pope and they hate, you know, popes. I mean, there are people who will criticize someone because of their race or religion or politics, well, you know, politics, I guess, is fair. So I want to be clear that neither is appropriate, you know, to talk well of someone or bad of someone simply because they're of a different racial or ethnic group. But I guess
exactly.
I'm curious to know, Mark, at your holiday table in Rochester, New York, do you talk about politics? Do you talk about religion? Do you talk about race?
Nobody in my family is religious. We used to be... when me and my brother were children, I believe we were raised as Lutheran, but at the time my parents didn't really believe it, but they felt that they had to give us some sort of religion, you know, background, and then as we got older, neither one of us believed it, so really none of us is religious. And as far as politics, we're all pretty much not entirely the same. I mean, there are points of difference. We're all basically Democrats, basically liberals. There's not really a lot of point of contention in our beliefs.
So you all agree, basically. That makes dinner table conversation pretty easy.
It does, and it's not that we're all in lockstep, it's just
right.
That individually we all have somewhat similar, or at the very least, compatible beliefs.
Have you ever had someone at your holiday dinner, maybe someone who's not in your immediate family, maybe it's a friend of one of your cousins, who comes in there and has a very different view. Maybe they're conservative. Maybe they're religious. maybe they disagree with
yes.
the way you do things. I'm just curious, has that ever happened to you?
Yes, I have had one of each, actually, those two things you mentioned. I had an uncle who was very, very conservative, who was at a Thanksgiving table with us last year, and he, with no instigation whatsoever, he just starts talking about, you know, we need to be thankful that we got those, you know, boys over in Iraq doing our fighting, and we need to be thankful that we had President Bush who was willing to take steps needs to be done. And we're all just kind of looking at him, and I'm the one, I was ex-Army, so I was like, you know, really, when you say that, that kind of implies that Iraq was a valid thing, and that kicked off a whole ball of wax, and then eventually, I could see my mother was not enjoying the argument going on, so I just kind of dropped it and let him think he won, but haven't really talked to that guy since, and then on one occasion we had a...
I was going to say, a lot of times, mom is the peacemaker, right? He's like, don't challenge your uncle right now. It's Thanksgiving. Let's sit down and eat. And, you know, I understand that. Was there an awkward silence when he said that? Before you get to your coworker, just your uncle. Did people kind of stare and, like, not know what to say?
There was kind of an awkward silence because, you know, I'm not the one who wants to try to pick fights all the time. So I just kind of, I let the first one go, and then I kind of let the second one go. And then people started looking at me like, when are you going to say something?
So are you the designated speaker in the family? I mean, like, they expect
yeah,
you.
I'm like the Joe Biden of the family. yeah.
That reminds me. I love Joe Biden. And one of the reasons I love Joe Biden is precisely because he's willing to be in politics. It's not when Joe Biden gaffes, it's not a gaffe that he tells a lie. It's not a gaffe that, you know, he makes a mistake. Usually his gaffes are true. In fact, I think that's the definition of a gaffe. It's when you tell something that's true, that's impolitic or seems inappropriate or whatever. I haven't met Barack. I mean, I went to the Denver coronation, as it were, of him as the nominee for the Democratic Party. I've seen him from afar, but I've never actually shook hands with Barack Obama. But I've had a 45-minute conversation with Joe Biden, and I'll have you know he's as intense, actually more intense in person, as he is on the air. He's someone who will, you know, grab you by the shoulders and look you in the eye. It's a little uncomfortable as he drills his point home. But yeah, no, I'm a big fan of Joe Biden. I just want to throw that out. Tell me about the coworker.
I had a coworker of my brother's came over one time, and we sit down. It was a Thanksgiving again. We're sitting there getting ready to eat, bring out all the food, and she's kind of looking at all of us. And eventually, my brother's like, "You know, what's the problem?" She's like, "Aren't you going to say grace?"
Uh-huh.
And my brother's like, "Yeah, we don't really do that." And I swear, I thought she was about to break out a baptismal pool or something. She literally gets to her feet, and with a slightly raised voice, she's telling us about how what an aberration it is that we could sit down to a Thanksgiving dinner without acknowledging the all-powerful deity that brings us food and all kinds of... I mean, she was like, we were sitting there watching like an audience. She was on such a roll. I guess at the end, she was kind of runs out of things to say and just kind of stands there staring at us, and we're like, "Well, are you ready to eat now or what?" And didn't really develop into a discussion after that, but I think she was embarrassed enough for the rest of the time that she didn't really say much.
Well, let me ask you this. I'm wondering if there's a room for compromise, and I hope there is, because while I wouldn't want a super religious person, you know, telling me that I'm going to hell or trying to change my religion, I would hope when she said, you know, "Don't you say grace," that, I don't know, you could have said, "Would you like to say grace?" You know, I mean, to me, there should be a certain kind of accommodation.
I see what you're saying, and you're right, although I believe that we afforded her every opportunity to say grace that she wanted. I think it was a more or less verbatim response. We said, "We just don't really do that." I don't think he was telling her, you know, if she wanted to, I don't think anybody would have given her any grief about it. But
yeah,
I mean, she really did launch into quite the crusade against the infidels with which she was breaking bread.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure she did. I think in those situations where we come from different backgrounds, I guess when I think of what I would say at that time, is I might look around and just say, "Hey, would you like to say grace?" And just let her have her moment, you know? That doesn't in any way take away from your own...
The moment over again, I'd probably do it your way, but I didn't think of that at the time.
That's okay. Well, maybe it's a suggestion for someone who's coming up the day after Christmas. My view is this, and this is true whether it's religion or politics or race, and it's a touchy thing. It's a line, and I want to hear what other people's line is. But in general, I allow and believe in allowing differences of opinion and differences of religion and everything up to a point. Like you said, your uncle, the first time you let it go. The second time you let it go. The third time you had to lay into him. That's about where I would land on the scale. You know, if someone makes some snide political comment, I'd probably just let it go the first time. I don't even know if I let it go the second time, but certainly the third time. When it comes to religion, I actually think I'm a little more tolerant of religion and religious differences than I am of political differences, interestingly enough. I would have let, you know, said, like you said, you know, well, you want to say grace for us? Now, if she after that laid into me for not agreeing with her particular religious fashion, then I certainly would have fought back. But I guess with religion, my general rule is allow everyone to practice their own religion as much as they want, but when they start impinging on my freedom, yeah, then I'd fight back. But I appreciate the example. I thought those were two very, very good examples, Mark.
Let me just say one more thing real quick, if I
sure.
may, Mark.
Go ahead.
You said you were Jewish before, correct?
Right, I am.
So as a member of one religion, when you're dealing with other religions, there is kind of a necessity of tolerance. I mean, there's always a necessity of tolerance, but there is kind of more of a necessity of being very careful to keep everything fair and even-handed. And I think that as an atheist, it's a little bit, perhaps for the worse, it's a little bit easier to draw it as a black and white, right and wrong kind of thing. I think a lot of us out there may forget that on occasion because it's not like we have our own religion to defend and thus recognize the validity of someone else's.
Hey, Mark, hang on for me because I got to take a break, but I want to discuss after the break, and I'd like you to stay on, atheism and, frankly, a lot of unreasoned prejudice, both, you know, from atheists toward religion is what you talked about, but also extremely unreasoned prejudice against atheists by religious people. So hang on for me, Mark, if you would. If you want to join the discussion, it's 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Back after this. Welcome back to the Leslie Marshall Show. This is Mark Levine, guest hosting for Leslie Marshall. Have you got your Christmas shopping done? Are you busy doing it now, frantically going from store to store, looking for that last-minute gift? Well, I hope you're preparing mentally for the holidays. I hope you're preparing for that holiday dinner. I hope you're preparing for what happens when that awkward uncle talks about politics and when that coworker comes in and discusses religion or wants to say grace when your family doesn't say grace. And sharing with me are stories from you listeners. Call in 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. I've kept Mark from Rochester on the line because he was telling me very interesting about how atheists might see, I don't know, differences among religion kind of differently. And I had to cut you off because of the break. Mark, go ahead.
I was just saying, you know, it might be impolitic, as you were saying, to say, but I think that without making any accusations, the best phrase for what I'm trying to get across is that when you're a member of one religion, it's difficult to criticize any other religion because it's almost like the saying about not throwing stones in glass houses and such. If you got the premise of one religion, what's to say that yours is right and somebody else is wrong? But I think it's a little bit more difficult for atheists to remember that lesson because they feel like it's a completely different premise that is, you know, more
greater difference
in nature, if you know what I mean.
I'll tell you, Mark, I think that that there's a middle ground, if you will, between atheism and fundamentalism, a strong middle ground. In fact, I think it's one occupied by most Americans of religious faith. I would argue that there's more in common among fundamentalist Christians, fundamentalist Jews, and fundamentalist Muslims than any of the three of them have in common with liberal Jews, liberal Christians, liberal Muslims. I've certainly put myself in the liberal Jewish category. I am not Orthodox. I will, you know, turn on the lights on the Sabbath. I will eat non-kosher food. Not that there's anything wrong with those that keep all of the Jewish tradition. I certainly don't. But I do think that those of us who recognize is too strong. Don't want to insult anybody. Those of us who believe that religions are imperfect, that they don't have the entire truth, recognize, as I do with my own faith, that there's some things about Judaism I like, there's some things I don't like. And frankly, that's true for me of virtually all religions. That's true for me of atheism as well. There's some aspects of it I like very much. You know, there's a certain logic, certain strong philosophy. You know, you have to look out for yourself. I think almost all beliefs that are widely held have something good about them. Not all. You know, I'm not going to find anything to defend fascism.
That is true. When you start looking at religious teachings, especially, you know, if you read, when I read the Bible, I see a lot of very liberal messages, especially in the New Testament part. Jesus is always talking about things like, you know, cure the sick, heal the sick, feed the hungry.
Right.
Things like that, that Republicans who feel like they have a monopoly on God in their party keep railing against and saying that's communism.
Yeah, no, Jesus said it's easier for a camel to go through an eye of a needle than a rich man to enter heaven. Somehow I can't hear Pat Robertson repeating that. I am convinced that if that long-haired hippie preaching revolution and talking about poor people in the meek inheriting the earth and getting rid of the money changers in the temple, that I am confident the Republicans would, if not crucify him themselves, would at least make sure that he got nowhere near our children. Right? I mean, he opposes everything the current Republican Party stands for. And that's why I find it astounding that 80 or 90% or whatever the statistic is of fundamentalist Christians support the Republican Party. I don't get it. And I guess it's because they support things like the appearance of religiosity. Republicans tend to support, for example, prayer in schools. Democrats tend to be opposed to that. Republicans tend to support things like government aiding religion, giving taxpayer dollars taken from everyone, including, you know, we Jews and you atheists, to Christians to spend. They support, in other words, using government to pay for churches, and they support prayer in schools. They support government forcing a particular religious conception down children's throats. To them, that's what Christianity is all about. It's not about love. It's not about care for the poor. It's not about looking out for your fellow man. It's not hanging out with lepers and prostitutes and all the things that the real Jesus did. No, it's all about...
It's certainly not a lot about judge not lest ye be judged yourself, I'll tell you that.
Certainly not. It's about religiosity. And the funny thing is I have read the New Testament, and Jesus preached a lot about those that have the appearance of religiosity, right? The people who seem to be religious, you know, who are doing it in his time, it was sacrifices in the temple, but aren't helping the poor, aren't helping the widow, aren't helping the orphan. And I have to say that those same themes are in the Jewish Bible, what Christians call the Old Testament. You have, I think it was Micah, who said, "What meaning are your fasts to me?" You know, there were Jews that would, they thought they did wrong, so they would go and fast to God and not eat and proclaim their sins. But if you fast and you still mistreat your fellow man, then your fasts are nothing to me, says God. So, again,
right,
you don't...
I think that's exactly the heart of the issue, is that when we talk about the actual values being imparted, you know, textually, like feeding the hungry and such, those are all, most of those are good, valid messages that are helpful. But when you start talking about the more dogmatic teachings, things like certain rituals you have to perform or certain caveats or like baptisms and communion, like you talk about things that really aren't values or life lessons and more just do this or else, that's where you come up with a lot of the problems. Because you have, like you were just saying, somebody who fasts but doesn't learn the lesson from the observance. Or you have somebody who prays five times a day in Islam and then blows up a bunch of children.
Exactly. And what's interesting to me, is that all major religions, and I can speak mostly about my own, Judaism, but I can certainly speak about Christianity and to some extent Islam, though I fully admit I know more about Judaism and Christianity than Islam. But all major religions actually have that protection against hypocrisy right there in the religion. As I said, there is a passage out of, and I believe it's Micah, so maybe some biblical scholar will tell me I'm wrong, that says, "What good are your fasts to me, O man, when you go and you mistreat the widow, the orphan, and so forth?" You know, I don't want this public, you know, religiosity when you go and mistreat your fellow man. And it's certainly in Judaism, it's certainly in Christianity, and it strikes me that the Republicans, the same Republican Party that insisted on all these staffers missing their Christmas, their you know, being with their families on Christmas because they wanted to give one last FU on the health care bill, that's not really in the Christmas spirit. And it astounds me, I guess, that this is the party that the most Christians, or at least strongly fundamentalist Christians, believe in.
Well, that's true, but I don't think the Republican Party is a reflection of religion. I think that at some point someone sat down and made the conscious choice on what angles are we going to market ourselves as a party, and religion seemed like the best choice at the time.
I think that's right, but I got to tell you, I'm from Nashville, Tennessee, originally, and I grew up there, and I still have a in some ways, a Southern mentality, though, you know, I'm Jewish, so that kind of throws out off everyone's radar. But I understand a lot of people, and there are a lot of fundamentalists in America. I'm sure more than 20% of Americans take the Bible literally. And they support Republicans because they think, I mean, there's a reason why George Bush said that Jesus was his favorite philosopher. It was to win votes. There's a reason why Sarah Palin plays that card. It's to win votes. Now, do I believe they really believe it? I'm not so sure. I'm really not so sure. But I got to tell you, you know, you say you're an atheist. There's an interesting poll that shows that atheists, of all people, are the least likely to get a vote for president. Thank you for your call, Mark. I really appreciate it. We'll be back talking more the next hour about what you're not supposed to talk about. 888-653-7543. Welcome back to the third hour of the Leslie Marshall Show. This is Mark Levine with the honor and privilege of filling in for my good friend Leslie Marshall. I hope one day to be your second favorite talk show host. And if you like my show, if you like hearing what I talk about, everything from the inside scoop on Washington politics to, well, let's face it, just sort of what we talk about around our dinner tables in the holiday season, I hope you will encourage your local radio station to pick up my show, The Inside Scoop, and to just say, hey, Mark Levine, that progressive radio host, he should be on air here along with or after Leslie Marshall. I like Leslie best, but Mark, my second favorite talk show host. We've been talking about what you would say at the end of a holiday meal, what you wouldn't say, what you might, how you might address someone. For example, Mark from Rochester was talking about a coworker who wanted to say grace, and that was not the tradition in his family, and sort of the awkwardness that followed that. And it came out, and I mean, this is absolutely no insult whatsoever, but a lot of people do. Mark is atheist. Mark does not believe in God. There's maybe 10 or 12% of Americans are atheists. Do you realize, and a lot of atheists don't even realize this, that atheists are in many ways the most hated minority in America? Let me give you an example. And again, it's kind of strange to give this example following a overtly religious message that we heard as an ad to the Leslie Marshall Show. But, you know, I believe that in religion and irreligion, I am a strict constitutionalist, and to me, the First Amendment protects your right to practice religion or to not practice religion. But there was an interesting survey, and I saw this around the time when Barack Obama was running for president, of what percentage of Americans would vote for a candidate of a certain race, religion, gender, sexual orientation, and so forth. And it showed that some 92% of Americans said they would vote for a woman for president. Okay, 8% would not, those chauvinist men. Actually, when you think about it, assuming all the women would, then that's probably 16% of men, still pretty large. And then it was less for people who would vote for an African-American. It was only 89% were willing to vote for an African-American. Maybe it was 92 for African-American, 89 for women. Frankly, I don't remember. That wasn't the shocking part of the survey. You keep going down the list. How many would vote for a Jewish president? Again, it's about 88, 89. That's all around 90%. And then you look and see what makes the numbers even lower. Well, the lowest three numbers were these. How many Americans would vote for a gay candidate for president? And the numbers were down in the high 60s. Only about 67, 68% of Americans would vote for a gay candidate, gay or lesbian candidate for president. Although we've already seen that that barrier is falling more and more by the wayside, as are, of course, the barriers to women or to non-whites holding elective office. You go further down and see how many Americans would vote for a Muslim for office, and that's in the 50s. So gay people are in the 60% of Americans would vote for a gay person for president. Again, you assume that they agree with your views and everything. You know, this is just, you know, you have a person of this faith or orientation or ethnic group that agrees with your views, would you vote for them for president? Gay people are in the 60s, Muslims are in the 50s, and the lowest of all, and this may surprise you, may not, surprised me, were atheists. That was in the 40s. Only about 45% of Americans would vote for an atheist who shared their views for president of the United States. Well, count me among them. I don't care if someone's atheist. I would certainly vote for an atheist that shared my views as President of the United States. It wouldn't bother me in the slightest. But a majority of Americans, a majority of Americans, would not vote for someone, even who had all their political views, just because that person didn't believe in God. And I found that astounding. Now, the Leslie Marshall Show admittedly goes to more blue states than red states. It covers a nice swath of territory from Ohio in the west, down south as far as Virginia, maybe even the border of North Carolina, all the way up through to Maine. So this is blue state paradise, right? This is the heart of the Democratic country. This may sound strange. I would predict that most people listening to my voice in blue state America, most people would find that statistic surprising. But heck, I'm from Nashville, Tennessee. And I assure you, in Nashville, Tennessee, and much of the South, and much of the Midwest, and, well, I should say the rural Midwest, not in Chicago, but in Indiana, and in Nebraska, and in North Dakota, South Dakota, people don't want to vote for atheists. They don't trust atheists. They'll vote for Jews, at least 85 to 90% of them, but not atheists. They'll vote for Muslims, some 55%. This one really surprised me. You'd think after September 11th there'd be a lot of anti-Muslim prejudice, and there clearly is. You know, 40-some-odd percent won't vote. But more people would vote for a Muslim than an atheist. What would vote for a gay person? Now, there's a lot of prejudice against gay people. I mean, let's face it. After racial prejudice, probably it's the greatest prejudice in the United States right now. More gay kids get beat up than any other minority. There's more suicides among gay teens than any other minority. And yet some 60-some-odd percent of Americans would vote for a gay person for president. So I find this surprising. I'm curious to know if you find this surprising. I have to tell you, though, this is by the Gallup poll. This is a very reputable poll, and it's happened year after year after year. These are consistent findings. And I've asked people, people who have no problem voting for a black man or a white woman or a black woman or a Jewish president or even a gay president, what it is that tells them that they can't vote for an atheist. So what? And they will come down with this strange idea that, well, I just don't trust them to be moral. I've never understood that. And I'll say to these people, but you know this religious person, and they're immoral. You know, I'll give examples, and they'll say, yeah, that's certainly true. This is a person who is of shows their religiosity and is immoral. Many of them will agree that Dick Cheney, George Bush, are immoral people. Maybe John Ashcroft, who's a very religious person. Certainly Pat Robertson, who gets involved in the diamond trade, the blood diamonds of Africa, the same trade that allows, that used to allow the leader of Liberia, not anymore, it's a new democracy, but used to allow the dictator of Liberia to kill the parents of children and create a children's army for him to defend his diamond mines. And Pat Robertson, this great, fundamentalist Christian leader, was investing in those mines and has connections, by the way, to the current right-wing Virginia governor. That's okay. But you can't not believe in God? Maybe someone can explain this to me, and I hope it is when you call in, 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. I hope someone can explain to me, because Mark from Rochester seemed to me like a very good guy, very nice, normal guy. With strong values, what it is that provokes this fear, I don't know, is it hatred against atheists? So what if someone doesn't believe in God? So what? I'm not saying it's wrong to believe in God either, certainly not. But if you don't, so what? Shouldn't we judge people based on what they do, not based on what they believe? Frankly, I've had that problem with Christianity for a long time. Uh-oh, Mark, there he goes, talking religion, talking about those things you're not supposed to talk about, but I'm sorry. When I first learned that according to classical fundamentalist Christianity, you're judged by your faith, not by your works, I was stunned. I thought the person that told it to me got it wrong. I was like, no, what you're saying is you're judged by your works, not by your faith. They said, no, you're judged in classical Christianity by your faith, not by your works. You're a murderer, but if you believe in Jesus, you're going to be saved. And I really didn't believe them. I thought they got it wrong. This was, I was young, you know, this was a fellow, a 12-year-old, and I just thought he didn't understand his own religion, because I knew what my religion taught, which is no, you're judged in most religions by your faith and your works. But when it comes to deciding between them, as I mentioned in the Micah passage, the works matter more. Caring for your fellow human being matters more than your faith in God, or at least equivalent to it. How can you possibly be a good human being if you have faith, but you don't do good works here? And I think as we come into the holiday season, the Christmas season, the Hanukkah season, I think implicit in our souls is this idea that we judge people based on what they do, not based on what faith they proclaim to have. Right? I would much rather have an atheist as my president who cares for the poor and looks out for her fellow human being and makes sure that we don't fight any wars we don't have to fight and protects our economy than some pseudo-religious, because I don't think you can be truly religious, no matter how many times you claim Jesus is your philosopher, if you go around and you torture people. If you go around and you have secret prisons and you have no respect for the rule of law, and you go around monitoring every American, including the hundreds of millions of us that have no reason to be monitored, except we might disagree with you, Mr. President Bush. He said that he believed in Jesus. Did his faith trump his works? Is that what you're saying, folks? Really? I just don't understand that sometimes. So let me put out a plea for atheists everywhere in America. As far as I'm concerned, I don't understand the prejudice against you. And maybe someone, whether you're atheist or not, can explain to me why people are so prejudiced against people just because they don't believe in God. I don't know that it's anybody's business. I think it's kind of interesting whether you believe in God or not. It tells me a lot about who you are and, you know, your philosophy about how you approach life. But it does not in any way, shape, or form tell me whether you're a good human being or not. And I'll tell you this, I trust an atheist far more than I do a fundamentalist of any faith. And that includes my own. That includes the Jewish faith, or a Christian faith, or a Muslim faith. I got a real problem with fundamentalists, because fundamentalists say that they have the entire truth. And anyone that claims to know the entire truth about the way the world works is dangerous. That's right, dangerous. I don't trust them. The world has too much gray to treat everything as black and white. Anyone that knows the entire truth and claims that, you know, God is particularly this way with a beard and with whatever your conception is, I am more than willing to say that my own conception, that your conception of God, I'm willing to recognize there's a truth in all religions. There's truth in atheism. There's truth in all cultures. To me, part of being a human being is learning to focus on all the ethnicities, all the cultures, and trying to find truth wherever you find it. To me, that's pretty basic. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the Leslie Marshall Show. This is Mark Levine filling in for Leslie Marshall into the last hour, and I was trying to figure out before the break, based on a conversation with a caller. That's part of what I like about callers. You kept leading me in a certain direction tonight, and I've been focusing a lot about religion, and I guess that's appropriate given it's the holiday season and the awkwardness about some of us who have different levels of religiosity. But I was trying to figure out why it is that so many in America are prejudiced against atheists, and I can't quite figure it out, but maybe Steve from New Jersey can help me. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot for having me. It's a great topic that definitely needs to have more light shed on it, so I'm glad you're bringing it up.
What are your thoughts? Where does this prejudice come from? Because I know even people who aren't – I'm talking about people who are not fundamentalists, right? The poll shows that only 45% of Americans would vote for an atheist for president. Fundamentalists in America are maybe 25%. So that means there's an additional 30% of people who are religious, not fundamentalists, but just religious. I mean, I follow my religious faith, although I'm not a fundamentalist, and yet wouldn't vote for an atheist. Can you explain it?
Well, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with the differentiation that people have. That to believe an atheist, they tend to think, you know, might believe that, you know, it's kind of hard to explain, because it's like, if you don't believe in a God or a higher, you know, being or purpose, you know, then you're pretty much against their whole belief structure. And I think that that's something that they can't wrap their head around.
It may be, you know? It may be that a lot of very religious people are intolerant, and so they assume that atheists are intolerant. And yet I know many atheists who are very tolerant of other people's religion. They say, you know, I don't believe in God. If you want to believe in God, that's fine. It's a free country. You know, just because someone's an atheist doesn't mean they're intolerant. By the way, I would not vote for an atheist who was intolerant of religion any more than I would vote for a religious person who was intolerant of another religion.
Oh, I completely concur. Currently I'm a graduate student in New Jersey, and I'm going through, political science and public administration, you know, hopefully one day to, you know, make a way for myself in politics. And I am a practicing atheist. And I'm, you know, I know when I go through and the professors, they all assume that every person in the class is religious.
Interesting.
And it's really difficult to try to get your point across, because they kind of look at it like, well, if you're going to get into politics, like, you really don't have a shot if you're an atheist.
Well, but, you know, they have a point. I mean, obviously I don't think it's right, but the polls will show that if you come out, and I have to use the term that gay people use, if you come out as an atheist, you may be, you know, looking at the death of your political career. So you might want to keep that quiet if you're going to want to have a career in politics.
Oh, and that's one of the things that, you know, you'll probably get attacked on first. And, you know, your opponents will see that as being like, it doesn't matter what else I've done in my career, but the point is, he doesn't believe in a God. You know, and that, like you said, you know, is going to be the one thing that you're definitely going to be vulnerable for, at least, I'd say, for another 25 years in this country.
It is surprising to me. I mean, we've made such strides. We have at least a half African American president. He's not our first black president, folks. He's half black. But we have our first half African American president. You know, Hillary Clinton came very, very close to being our first female president. We're going to have one any day now. You know, I detest Joe Lieberman's politics, but I don't think the reason why that people were, you know, not liking the Gore Lieberman ticket, it had nothing to do with Lieberman being Jewish. They just, you know, well, I don't know. Gore won the election, so I can't really complain there.
Yeah.
But the point is that these advances are being made, and yet when it comes to something as simple as not believing in God, which seems to me, I don't know, relatively uncontroversial, at least in my view, it's at least as uncontroversial as believing in a virgin birth I don't know. It seems to me that I can't understand the prejudice. I mean, do you have? Let me ask you your own beliefs, if you don't mind my asking. You don't have to tell me, but
sure.
Do you find that in your family that there's a lot of atheist belief and people are prejudiced, or what?
There's no atheist beliefs, with the exception of myself, my wife, and we're going to be raising our son as an atheist.
Do they mistreat you, your family? Tell you what, Steve.
No.
We
my
got
family.
I got to tell you something. We're coming up against a break in the news. Stay on for me. I got a couple other callers. I want everyone to stay on. We got lots of time, a whole half hour to discuss this. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the Leslie Marshall Show. Holidays are around the corner. For many of us, it's just a chance to celebrate with our families. For some of us, it is certainly a religious celebration. But one of the things I'm discovering is that Americans got a real problem with atheists, and I'm trying to understand why that is. I got a number of callers on the line. Let me finish, though, with Steve from New Jersey, who was explaining that to me. Go ahead, Steve.
The one problem that you run into the most is, you know, you're constantly defending yourself against people who are, of all religions, who the one thing they all have in common is they can attack you, you know, for being an atheist. So, I mean, the one thing that I get just so sick and tired of hearing is these people who, you know, and I have no problem with religion. I believe that there's a lot of good in a lot of religions. But I believe that the one thing that I cannot stand is when people have this belief that everything happens for a reason.
Yeah.
And the first thing I try to fire back with is, you know, what did a man do who was convicted of a rape and spent 30 years in prison before DNA evidence, you know, frees the man?
Or what about it? You could take something a lot simpler.
What did a child do that was raped by a pedophile? What did they do so wrong in their life?
Or a five-year-old with leukemia. It doesn't have to be just crime, you know? I mean, what about the things that disease or the hurricane that wipes out a community? It is hard to explain those things from a religious sensibility. I'll do my best at the end to give my own interpretation of it. But look, let me be very, very clear. Steve, you are an American. You have every right to believe anything you want. And I firmly believe that whether you're an atheist or have a strong religious belief, as long as you believe that others also have the right to have beliefs different from your own, I'm a fan of yours, no matter what your personal beliefs are. And I really want to thank you for calling in. Let me go to another person in New Jersey. Not Steve. This is Sam in New Jersey. Sam, welcome to the show.
Oh, hi. Mark?
Yes.
This is Sam.
You're on the air.
So I'm sorry for the interference. I'm on my cell phone.
Yeah, it's a little scratchy, so go ahead. Talk loud.
Okay. A possible reason why people are so against atheists, I myself am a pagan priest, and I've noticed that a lot of the anger and hatred is through fear.
What are they afraid of, Sam?
They're afraid because our culture is more of a religious culture than it is a logical culture. And they're afraid that the culture will basically go down the tubes if the atheists are right.
Yeah, I guess, but I don't know. To me, as I said, a fundamentalist of a religion, even my own, even a fundamentalist Jew, but also fundamentalist Christian, fundamentalist Muslim, they scare me a lot more because it seems to me that they have this belief that their specific conception of God is the only right one. That scares me a lot more than someone that just says, well, there is no God. I don't get it. Thanks for your call, Sam. I'm going to cut you off a little bit just because, frankly, your cell phone is a little scratchy, and that's why you should call from a landline if you have one, folks. But thank you for your call, Sam. I do appreciate it. Let me go on to Mike in Westchester. Mike, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi, Mark. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I think it's actually the result of two things. One, I think, is a certain amount of cultural insensitivity. I think if you grow up in a culture where it's predominantly, let's say, Catholic, or Orthodox Jew, or Shiite Muslim, the idea that anyone can believe something different from what you believe, even if it's within that same major religion, is just kind of like, well, that's just plain crazy. And if someone who doesn't believe in God at all just seems to be beyond the pale, I think that's the first part. The second part, I think, is a misconception that some people of faith have, that if you are an atheist, they equate that with being immoral or amoral.
Right.
And that, of course, that's not true. We should know that. But
right.
I think that, you get people who will say, you know, if you say to someone, well, I'm an atheist, they'll say, oh, well, if you're an atheist, how come you're not out killing people? You're like, well, why should I be out killing people? Well, you know, you don't have any commandment from God saying you shouldn't murder. Well, yeah, but I just don't think it makes sense to murder people.
Sadly, there are many religious people that murder people. I mean, Jim Jones, there's a person who is certainly inspired by his own wild, wacky, crazy religious cult. And, of course, everyone ends up drinking the Kool-Aid in that instance. So I've never understood how people say things like that and then don't recognize that they're a bunch of religious mass murderers as well.
Well, because they think that you have to have some kind of supreme being or some kind of divine intelligence or whatever, how you want to put it, laying down the law to humans that we can't figure out by ourselves how to conduct ourselves that we can get along and move forward. And I think that's part of a misconception right there.
I think so, too. Hey, I appreciate your call, Mike. Thanks very much.
No problem.
You know, I am confronted as often, though, I must say, and certainly throughout this I've been talking about the intolerance of Americans toward atheists, and I am firmly against that. But I should also say, being a liberal, being a progressive, and I want to put a little thought into your minds for the holidays, that I find a number of liberals and progressives who are intolerant towards religion. And I want to encourage you not to be so this Christmas season, this holiday season. As far as I'm concerned, we should be tolerant of every single belief that is tolerant of other beliefs. In other words, I am only intolerant against intolerance, and I am. I am. The only thing that I'm bigoted against is bigots. I hate bigots. And I think you have every right to hate bigots. And no, I don't think that that is a contradiction. I think it's okay to be intolerant of intolerance. And that's why I have a lot of problem with a lot of fundamentalist religions. But let me suggest to you that even if you're atheist, even if you're a secular humanist, that there's a lot of beauty in religion, I find. Even if you don't believe in God, you don't have to believe in God to recognize, for example, that there's a lot of beauty in the Bible. Now, there's a lot of bad stuff in the Bible. There's slavery. There's certainly not treating men and women equally. Yeah, you don't have to convince me there's a lot of bad stuff in the Bible. But let me say out there, and this may seem strange coming from someone like me, but hey, Christmas is around the corner. There's a lot of good stuff in the Bible, too. I was talking with some of my family, actually, about the story of Adam and Eve. Now, Adam and Eve is the classic evolution versus creationist story, right? The classic progressive, the classic liberal, like myself, says, well, of course I believe in evolution. And many will say, well, that's just a silly story. Obviously, Adam and Eve weren't the first human beings. We evolved from chimpanzees and apes and so Neanderthals. We all, you know, I know the whole evolution story. And so that's just a child story. But I was talking about the power of Adam and Eve with some family members. And at least in the Jewish conception, I think it's a very powerful, wonderful story as soon as you don't treat it as literal. Treat it as the parable that I think it was meant to be. And when we come back, I want to give you my conception of Adam and Eve. I guess you give you a little religion. You don't expect that from a guy like me, but a little bit of a religious conception. No, you don't have to believe in God, but a conception of why I think this story, this parable, this truth, if as you will, this human truth, actually has something to give us, something we can learn from in this holiday season. And then I'm going to conclude in the last break with things I can be thankful for, even in Washington, yes, even in that hotbed of iniquity. There are things to be thankful for, like to go into the holidays on an up note. So when I come back, a little bit of religion and a little bit of what I'm thankful for in Washington. If you want to call in, there's still time. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the last 15, well, a little more than 10 minutes of the Leslie Marshall Show. This is Mark Levine filling in for Leslie Marshall. And I just have to say, at the end of 9 hours of filling in, I want to thank her. I doubt she's listening. But if you are, Leslie, thank you again for sharing your baby, your listeners with me. I have enjoyed every minute of it. I love your listeners. I hope they like me. If you do like me, hey, you know, tell your local radio show. You need to get Mark Levine in addition to Leslie Marshall. I think we can make a nice little match, actually. I want, though, as we head into Christmas Eve tomorrow, as we head into religious season or non-religious, if you're atheist, I want to talk a little bit about what I see as some beauty in my own particular religious conception. You know, as a secular progressive liberal like myself, you're more often likely to hear people like me say what I've been saying for the last half hour. You know, you shouldn't pick on atheists, that there's nothing wrong with being an atheist, that it's perfectly fair and just and fine and moral to not believe in God. That's what a lot of progressives talk about, and that's fine. I agree with that. But I also want to suggest that there's some beauty in religion as well. And I want to do so by focusing on the first story in the Bible. See, you didn't know that Mark could preach. See, you just thought I knew politics. I want to talk about the first story in the Bible because it's the one that's often used to as a battle between those who are fighting evolution, and I firmly believe in evolution. But the story of Adam and Eve, once you stop taking it literally and start reading it as a parable, as a moral story, as a fable with a message, I think you can see there's a lot of beauty in it. Think about Adam and Eve in an evolutionary context. Okay, what made Adam and Eve the first human beings? Well, evolutionarily, we all started as animals. And as animals, whether, you know, fish or chimps or apes, as animals, we had no moral choices. What does an animal do? An animal lives by instinct. They eat, they sleep, they copulate, that's about it, right? I mean, you know, eat, sleep, and copulate. That's sort of their whole existence, right? They're driven by instinct. They don't make moral choices. And since human beings were once apes, and I do believe in evolution, or, you know, Neanderthals, you know, we were once animals. That's all we did. We acted by instinct. What did Adam and Eve do, though, that was so different? They lived in Eden. Everything was simple. It's very simple living in Eden. You don't make moral choices, right? Everything is provided for you. You eat, you sleep, you copulate. But Adam and Eve ate from a fruit from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Many people don't recognize or read the Bible. What was the tree they ate from? It was the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And once they ate that piece of fruit, the Bible says fruit, doesn't say apple. Once they ate that piece of fruit, they knew good and evil. They knew moral choices. They knew that the decisions they made would affect their lives. An animal may make a wrong decision, right? They may go eat a berry that kills them. They may go into an area where there's no food. Animals make wrong decisions, but they don't recognize it as, most don't, maybe some do, don't recognize it as a wrong decision, a moral choice. Human beings knew good and evil now. And with the knowledge of good and evil, what does it come? It comes from knowledge of mortality. Most animals don't realize they're going to die. We human beings know we're going to die. It came pain, right? We knew real pain, not just physical pain, but emotional pain, pain of unfulfilled promise. What made Adam and Eve the first human beings? Again, making clear, I mean that as a parable, not in some literal sense. They were the first animals to have moral choice. The first animals to know the difference between good and evil. The first animals you can blame, frankly, for doing something wrong. I mean, you know, are you going to blame, a fish for swimming in the wrong direction? So actually, if you look at Adam and Eve in this sense, in a philosophical sense, it has a lot of meaning. That with knowledge comes pain and also comes true satisfaction. You know, the baby doesn't make the moral choice. The man, the woman does. So there's a lot of very interesting stories that if you take away that you have to believe in God concept, because what I just said now had nothing to do with God and nothing to do with taking the Bible literally. It had to do with explaining that knowledge comes consequences. And that's something that is a religious truth, but I also think is a non-religious truth. I would hope as we enter this holiday season, we could all be a little more respectful of each other, religious people could be more respectful of atheists. Atheist people could be more respectful of religion. That we all could recognize that we come at our own existence from different places, different religious places, different racial places, even different political places. And this is the hardest thing for me to say. When your conservative cousin comes at the table and starts spouting Rush Limbaugh at you, roll your eyes, set the person straight, but try to do so in a way that lets the person, I don't know, redeem themselves. If you insult someone mercilessly, and I guess some people deserve it, they're less likely to come around to your view. Try to sit them down and explain to them why they're wrong. That's partly why I do what I do on the Inside Scoop, to give you the ammunition you need to set your Republican neighbor down, to set your Republican family member down, and explain to them why they're wrong. And, you know, most of the time they won't listen. And most of the time, but sometimes, if you really work hard at it, you can come to some kind of agreement between you. Frankly, I wish the Republican Party would do that. We would have more bipartisan legislation. They've decided to be the party of no, but that doesn't mean you have to be the party of no. And when you sit around with that uncle who's, you know, spouting crazy conservative ideas, maybe, just maybe, you can agree on something. And I don't know, to me, that's part of the holiday spirit. I want to end with the good news. The good news for us progressives, because everyone's focusing on the bad news. Everyone's focusing on Obama didn't accomplish all he said he was going to, or the Senate health bill doesn't go as far as it could, and all that's true. But let me give you some good news. The economy is on the upswing. We're still in a recession, but we're coming out of it. That alone is good news. We were facing the greatest depression since the Bush Depression, and Obama is bringing us out of it, and people thought that was impossible just a year ago. There's also good news politically. For all the talk of the Tea Parties, for all the talk of the Fox Propaganda Channel, for all the misinformation brought forward by Republicans about the health insurance reform effort. Would you believe that Americans are still split pretty much as they were on Election Day? Yes, that's right. If you look at their approval of Democratic policies versus Republican policies, you find that they're split about 52-44. You know what the election was? 53-46. It's all within the margin of error. If anything, you know, we're doing slightly better. We lost 1% among Democrats and 2% among Republicans. We're not doing that bad. For all the Democrats that fear 2010, we're pretty much where we are then. And frankly, I wish the Republicans would recognize that the majority of Americans simply think they're wrong. And if you're worried about the moderates, if you're worried about the Joe Liebermans of the Democratic Party, if you think they're destroying us, and, you know, I'd agree with some of that. I certainly believe in a public option. I certainly believe in buying into Medicare. I'm very angry at Joe Lieberman for that. But Joe Lieberman's going to go home to Connecticut. And he's going to see his poll numbers, which dropped 10% in December alone, from a 40% favorable rating to a 30% favorable rating. Now, in Connecticut, that means he not only lost the Democrats, he's lost the independents as well. Lieberman is becoming someone who's supported only by the Republicans. And if 70% of people in Connecticut don't approve of Lieberman, he's going to lose in 4 years. And that gives me hope. It gives me hope that he's going to change his mind. It gives me hope that come the conference in January and February, we're going to get closer to the House bill than the Senate bill. So don't give up hope, liberals, progressives. As you go into New Year, I want you to all make a resolution that you're going to do your best to call your member of Congress, to support progressive ideals, to recognize that President Obama is doing the best he can, even though he's imperfect. Continue to push him on the left, but recognize that, yes, things are slowly getting better in America. And I'm also going to ask you in my last couple minutes to support progressive radio. Whether it's my show or Leslie Marshall's show or any other progressive that you hear on the air, there are not enough of us. You know, one of the reasons why I find that liberals are so despondent in this holiday season is because all they see around them is the Fox propaganda channel, is the Rush Limbaughs, is the Sean Hannitys of the world. And they don't recognize that, yes, we are still a majority. We're still a solid majority. Those of us that simply want to live, if you are a religious person, according to the teachings of Jesus in the New Testament, the idea that we are our brother's keeper. And that's from the Jewish Bible, from the Old Testament, right? That we look out for each other, that we are all Americans, we're all in this together. That doesn't mean letting people take advantage, but it does recognize that every American, whatever their religion, their race, their ethnicity, their gender, their sexual orientation, whatever economic status they are, whether they're poor or rich, every American who works hard and plays by the rules should have a chance to succeed. And that means a chance for kids to go to college. That means a five-year-old who shouldn't die simply because they can't afford enough health care. Basic progressive ideals, the same ideals that are in every religion, the same ideals that they teach at Christmas time, the same ideals of looking out for your fellow human being, the ideals that, frankly, Christians used to celebrate, and the most religious ones, the ones who are most true to their faith, continue to celebrate to this day. As we go into Christmas, think about what you can do for your fellow man, for your fellow woman. John F. Kennedy said, ask not what your country can do, what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. That is the progressive vision. I hope you've enjoyed my three times filling in for Leslie Marshall. I will see you next year. This is Mark Levine signing off.